welcome to another episode of Booktown Blether. It's just Lou and I today because Ruth is still in Australia. And it's not that we're trying to do loads of podcasts while she's away. It's more that we just suddenly thought that we should do something for Valentine's Day, partly prompted by the book from the box that Lou talked about.
That's right. Consulting the Oracle.
Consulting the Oracle. So we're going to touch on a few different things. I don't know whether you want to start with the Oracle.
Oh, we could do.
So this is a Valentine's Day special where we're looking at romance and love in literature and things like that. But we're going to start with some practical suggestions which you may want to try for Valentine's Day.
So this was from the book that we spoke about last time, Consult the Oracle, or How to Read the Future was the subtitle. And this was, this particular one was published in 1900. The first was 1899. And it touches on an awful lot of things, an awful lot of subjects. The meaning of your dreams, the mystery about plants, Cupid at work all the year round. But it also touches on omens, charms and spells for lovers. Which some of them are quite interesting.
I bet.
And involve weird practices.
Oh. So are we going to censor?
I have done a little bit of censoring.
You've done a little bit of censorship.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yeah, because, you know.
We don't need to put a warning out with this podcast.
We're okay.
Right, that's good.
Anyway.
Good, okay.
This one creeps in. So the first one that I've sort of come across and wanted to point out was the willow wand. So the
right.
willow. Yeah, exactly. The willow is to be used for a lover's spell in the following way. A girl takes a willow wand in her left hand.
Left hand.
And taking care that no one sees her, slips out of the house and runs round it three times, saying, "He that is to be my husband, come and catch the other end."
Wow.
Now, how are you meant to do that without anybody noticing? I'm not sure.
No, as you are trying to do it in secret.
Yeah. And during the third circuit, the likeness of the future husband will appear and seize the end of the wand.
Oh, I'd found that a bit creepy.
Do you? I thought, no.
Well, it'd be more like you're running around the house and then suddenly
and then
this image.
Apparition.
Yes, an apparition appears.
Yes. That is your future husband.
Who is your future husband?
I don't know if he disappears again.
Well, I guess so. But he's got the end of your wand. I hope he lets go.
So that was that one.
Right.
And then snails. I've got a couple with snails.
See, I can't run around my house either. What do you do? I have a terraced house.
If you're in a terrace.
Yeah, how are you going to run around your house
maybe
then?
Maybe you have to run through the other people's houses.
I don't think it's one I'm going to do.
No.
It's going to prove very difficult. I'd have to go over walls, fences. Goodness knows. I'd be exhausted after lap one, I think. I think I would just be throwing my wand in the sea.
All right, then. So how about this one?
Right.
Okay. If a girl will take a snail and place it on a slate.
I can do that.
Yeah. It will describe by its turning the initials of her future husband's name.
Right.
So I'm presuming by that his name will be in the slime.
Yes. That's right.
How long
do you have to wait? Because snails do not move quickly.
Exactly. I remember as a kid having snail races. Did you ever do that?
I didn't, no.
We would line them up and then sit there and watch them get to like a stick. about a foot away from them.
Right.
Yeah. And we'd, oh, this.
Had your parents suggested this as a pastime?
Possibly.
It sounds like. I should have thought of that one myself when my children were little. I know.
We painted the shells, which is probably not a good thing, so that we knew which one was ours, just in case, you know, they got a bit excited.
Well,
or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah. But we never put it on a slate to see.
No.
There is another one later on about a snail, which is quite awful.
Oh.
But, yeah.
I remember, actually, when you said about that, I remember there was a thing when I was a child that you were supposed to peel an apple.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Peel the apple. You had to maintain, the peel shouldn't break. You had to peel the apple in a one-er.
Yeah.
And then throw it over your shoulder or something. Or am I mixing that up with salt? I know you had to, you did have to throw it, I think. Or you had to drop it. You had to do it very carefully and then, I think, throw it over your shoulder.
Right.
And the apple peel was supposed to tell you the initial of your future husband.
Oh, okay.
As well.
So it would probably be something like
that's quicker
Oscar
than a snail.
Or something, because it would be an O, wouldn't it, really?
No, not necessarily. But it would be more curly, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Or Derek or...
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But funny you should say about apples,
because in
here it says about apples as well.
Right.
You can ask an apple pip.
Okay.
whether her professing lovers really care for her or not, let a girl take an apple pip and, naming one of her followers, put it into the fire.
Okay.
If the pip makes a noise in bursting from the heat, it is a proof of love.
Oh.
But if it is consumed without a crack, she may be satisfied that there is no real regard felt towards her by the person named.
Oh, right. Goodness.
Now, yeah, I can remember... I'm going back to childhood again.
Uh-huh.
I can remember throwing apple pips in the fire. Not for that, but just because they do crack.
They crack.
And it's quite fun.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Should I, at this point, seeing as you have mentioned pip, I have a quote that I had written.
My fave.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is from Great Expectations.
Lovely.
And it is Pip the person.
Yep.
I thought, well, what was Pip's surname? But he was called Pip because his name was Philip Pirrip.
That's right, yes.
And he was called Pip. And he was in love with Estella.
Yeah.
And he was waiting, wasn't he, or you might know better than me, because I've only read Great Expectations the once. But he wanted to marry her, but he was waiting. She couldn't give permission because, was it Miss Havisham, who was the woman who sat in her wedding dress forever at a table with dusty candles and goodness knows
That's
what.
Right.
Wasn't she the Estella's guardian?
She was, yeah.
So he was wanting
to... He was sent away and had to make good of himself.
Ah, right, right.
Yeah.
Well, he says, you are part of my existence, part of myself. You have been in every line I have ever read since I first came here, the rough common boy whose poor heart you wounded even then. You have been in every prospect I have ever seen since, on the river, on the sails of the ships, on the marshes, in the clouds, in the light, in the darkness, in the wind, in the woods, in the sea, in the streets. You have been the embodiment of every graceful fancy that my mind has ever become acquainted with.
Oh.
Is it a happy ending for Pip then? I can't remember. Yes, I think it is, isn't it, on that score?
Estelle was quite awful. I could remember thinking when I first read it how cruel she was.
Yes.
But then
that was Miss Havisham encouraging her to be
when
cruel.
You get the whole picture, you understand why she was. Yeah, but he's got such a lovely way with words, hasn't he?
Yes.
I don't know his, you know, coming, writing words like that. There was a Mrs. Dickens, wasn't there? He was happy.
Weren't there two Mrs. Dickens?
Right, okay. So he was...
I have a feeling, and I'm sure if anybody's listening to this, you can go and write on our Facebook page. And again, you may be shouting at your... whatever it is you listen to the podcast on, whether it's your phone or the radio or something.
Well, we encourage a bit of shouting.
Yes. Yeah. I think... he left his wife for a much younger woman.
Oh, I think you're right. Yes.
Yeah. Later in life.
Okay.
Mm. We may have to quickly Google that.
Okie dokie.
So, yes. But that did happen a lot, obviously. Mm. Yes, I don't think it was a case that his first wife died. I think he...
No. But I just think that if you're writing words like that, it's got to be from experience, hasn't it? It's got
yes,
to come from
yes,
the core.
Surely.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Lovely.
Yes. Yeah, so have you anything more from the oracle?
We'll go back to the oracle.
Yes.
The other snail one. Hang on.
Oh, yes, because you promised more snails.
Oh, no, before
and
that.
Some weird ones. I mean, there have been quite weird so far.
Before that, this is quite a sweet one. Where is this? Which is to be married first? Now, which of two persons is to be married first? Take the merry thought of a fowl and let each take hold of an end and pull the one against the other. Whichever gets the longest piece will be first wedded. Now, this is obviously family. Sisters,
right?
Because there's always a poor sister.
Yes,
who, you know. Yes, doesn't make it.
Yes, it's like, you know, yeah, Lady Mary and Downton Abbey and Edith.
Yeah. So there was probably a lot of that. But
so what are they getting hold of?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
I looked at this and I thought, well, what's a merry thought?
Yes,
and I instantly went to the teddy bear, people, you know, the merry thought. Teddy bears?
No.
Sort of mid-20th century.
Right,
lovely
no.
little teddy bears.
Oh, right,
quite
no.
collectible.
Yes.
A merry thought is a wishbone.
Ah.
Yeah. And when, because I had to have a look at this, I thought, what's
going on here?
Of course, yes. And I went on the Merry Thought teddy bears website.
Right.
Because they're still going.
Uh-huh.
And they have, like, you know, the collectible teddy bears with a little wishbone around their neck.
Oh,
and on their
right.
logo, it's got a little wishbone.
Oh, well, there you
Isn't
are.
Isn't that sweet?
Yes.
Because I thought, well, I've never heard of that before.
So it's the person who gets the... It's like when you pull a wishbone. It's the person who gets the longer
bit,
one gets
the one.
Their wish.
That's right.
And in that case, they're the ones that are going to marry first.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, because it was always a bit of a rush, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to another snail one, making a snail of use. This is awful.
Oh.
If black snails are seized by the horns...
Oh, my
God. I know.
That's pretty tricky to do.
It's...
Yes, and you'd have to surprise them.
You would. Another childhood thing.
Yeah.
Touching the, and old poor snails. And, right, okay, if black snails are seized by the horns and tossed over the left shoulder.
Oh, yes.
The left again.
Oh, yes, the left again. I'm sure that was the same with the apple peelings.
Yeah. The process will ensure good luck to the person who does so. I mean,
right.
This is not a lovey thing.
No.
But it was just because I was looking through and found another snail.
Yes.
And I thought, well, that's a horrible picture, isn't it? All these
it is.
People trying to grab snails and chuck them over their
that's
shoulders.
Right.
Just for a bit of good luck.
Uh-huh.
So then I put the Oracle book away because it was
right.
getting far too cruel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
So we've
right.
given up on that. But we didn't put a picture up of the Oracle, I don't
no,
think.
No, no,
really
we haven't.
Should,
yes.
So.
I don't think we've put any pictures up for the last one.
No,
and we do need to.
Yes.
Yes.
A lovely little book. even though some of it's quite cruel.
We will. We need to get into the habit of doing that.
Yes.
So shall I... So we now come to a book that I have always... Well, actually, I was going to say a book that I've always liked a lot, but it isn't. I'm a big fan. I'm a huge fan of Lord Peter Wimsey and Dorothy L. Sayers.
Yeah.
But actually, of all the books, and I know I'm, you know, with other fans of Lord Peter Wimsey, I'm probably going to be unpopular. I don't like Gaudy Night.
Right.
These quotes come from Gaudy Night.
Right.
But it's not. I find it quite tedious, really. Oh. I have read it, and in fact, I think I started to try and read it again, thinking, "Oh, maybe I've just not got the." Anyway, but no, I didn't get very far with it. Mm. But Lord Peter Wimsey is this gentleman kind of sleuth, and it was kind of halfway through the series of books that Dorothy L. Sayers eventually wrote, she decided to introduce a love interest for him.
Oh, right.
Who was Harriet Vane, who is a crime writer. And she's introduced into the series in the book Strong Poison. And she has been accused of poisoning her lover.
Right.
And, you know, these books were written in the or date from the 20s, 30s. Mm. And so she's, you know, she's a lady author and she's writing about crime and she was living with somebody.
Oh.
Yes, not married.
Right.
And then she's accused of poisoning him. Anyway, Lord Peter develops quite the thing for Harriet Vane.
Right,
and,
okay.
But given what she's been through, she says, you know, no, you know, I've become very fond of you, but I'm sorry, I don't want to marry you. Mm. Anyway, they have further encounters and adventures and things. And he regularly asks her to marry him and she just says no. And then in Gaudy Night, he asks again, this is one of the times that he regularly, so this is 1st of April, the question had arrived from Paris in a single Latin sentence, starting off dispiritedly, num, a particle which notoriously expects the answer no. Harriet, rummaging the grammar book for polite negatives, replied still more briefly, benign or benini, or because this is it, we're going to have a bit of a problem because neither Lou nor I know how to pronounce Latin.
We'll have to be told.
But benign or benini means no, thank you. So he regularly would ask. Anyway, so in Gaudy Night, he says, but I will ask you now, and if you say no, I promise you that this time I will accept your answer. Harriet, you know that I love you. Will you marry me? They passed, I must point out, they are on, a, when they're in, this be Cambridge, is it? I should know which one it is, Cambridge or Oxford. They're punting along the river because it says they passed beneath the arch of the bridge and I thought that's going to just sound
that's
really
Cambridge,
random.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Cambridge.
Yeah.
So they're in Cambridge.
They're in
on a boot.
Oh, we're going to get comments.
So yeah. they passed beneath the arch of the bridge and out into the pale light once more. Peter. She stood still and he stopped perforce and turned towards her. She laid both hands upon the fronts of his gown, looking into his face while she searched for the word that should carry her over the last difficult breach. It was he who found it for her. With a gesture of submission, he bared his head and stood gravely, the square cap dangling in his hand. And now he says, Placetna or Plaquetna Magistra. And she says, Plaquette or placette. So apologies to all you Latin speakers out there. But basically she says yes.
She did say yes.
Yes, well, it's yes. It's a version of yes.
Oh.
So she does. She does. And then the final book that was written in the series was Busman's Honeymoon, where they solve a crime on their honeymoon.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yes. Which is another good one.
Yeah.
So they do finally marry. So it is very romantic.
Lovely.
But I'm sure I was looking. There was a bit that I seem to remember from Gaudy Night, but I wonder whether it's in a different book where he makes quite a lovely speech. But anyway, I couldn't find it.
No. So let us know if it's a k or a s.
Oh yes, how do you pronounce? Placetna, placetna, placetna.
They were still doing Latin when I was at the Douglas Hewitt.
Uh-huh.
And we did do it for the first year.
Right.
But I can't remember any of it.
No.
No. No, absolutely nothing. I'm going to go on to a new book. It's following on from a Radio 4 show.
Right.
Conversations from a Long Marriage.
Hmm.
Have you ever caught it?
No.
It's written by Jan Etherington. And it's... Oh, Joanna Lumley.
Right.
And Roger Allam.
Oh, really? Oh, I like both.
He's got such a lovely voice.
Yes, he has. Yes, oh, I must try and look that up.
It's so funny. It's really... Uh-huh. And Jan Etherington was... she wrote quite a few sort of sitcoms in the 90s.
Right, yes.
I've got it here, Second Thoughts.
Yes.
And Faith in the Future with James Bolam and Linda Bellingham. Do you remember? They were quite... I loved Linda Bellingham. I thought she was brilliant.
Oh, and I'm a huge fan of James Bolam.
Yeah, they were good.
Yes.
But it hit a sort of nerve with me when she... Because this couple have been married a long time.
Uh-huh.
And basically it's just their days.
Right.
And what they say to each other and what happens to them.
Uh-huh.
And it's just quite ordinary.
Yes.
But really funny and sometimes really quite poignant as well.
Uh-huh.
But I thought we'd carry on from new love and trying to find love.
Mm.
And to people who have been together for that amount of time and are just so comfortable with each other.
Yeah.
But then she's got an author's note at the front of the book. And it says, the idea for my comedy Conversations from a Long Marriage was born bizarrely out of fury.
Oh.
I was angry about the way older women were portrayed in drama and comedy, either as miserably married interfering mothers-in-law, bitter ex-wives, tetchy, spiteful control freaks, or as technophobic grannies in pinnies, patronised by the whole family. Really hit a nerve with me.
Uh-huh.
Come on, I'd shout at my radio and TV. Where are my contemporaries, the strong, smart, funny women who have laughed and loved their way through life since the summer of love and might still be married to the sexy hippie they met at Glastonbury in 1971? We may be senior rail card holders, but we turn up the car radio, sing along with Marvin Gaye, and are still dancing in the street with Martha and the Vandellas. Yet we were nowhere represented. So I wrote a series myself about a woman who I recognised, who had my references. I placed her in a long marriage that still fizzed with passion for life, music, wine, and yes, sex. And I knew who I wanted to play her. And she goes on to talk about Joanna Lumley. But it struck me because of this thing about a... getting off topic a little bit. But this thing about an invisible middle-aged woman. And how you get, you know, passed by in the street and sort of passed by everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And good for Jan.
Yes.
To shout and say, you know, uh-huh. we're not technophobes. We do know what we're doing. We do know what we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And we can still love.
Yes.
Yes. So that's Conversations from a Long Marriage. And it's a really funny little book.
So that are those the scripts?
Yes.
All right. Very good.
Yes.
From the Rainbow. And is it still show. On the, or you can get it on,
you can
get it on, was it on the BBC?
On
right.
BBC, yeah. So you can get it on
right.
Sounds.
But I will have to go look for another one. So how long ago is that? Not that long ago.
Yeah, a couple of years.
Oh, I
yeah.
see. Oh, okay. Really? Yeah.
They repeated it last year, I think.
Oh, very good.
So, yeah.
Oh, well, I will have to look that up.
Very good.
So we'll come back to another book that I will, I'm sure, go on about endlessly. I think I've already mentioned it. I don't know how many times. Far From the Madding Crowd. And I've got a few quotes from Far From the Madding Crowd. I think I talked about it in the one we did for Christmas, didn't I? Because
yes.
it was Mr. Baldwood was wanting to propose to, or yeah, not propose, but Bathsheba Everdeen, who's the main character, had promised to give her answer to him at a party on Christmas Eve.
Yes, I remember. Yeah.
So it's a great book. Bathsheba Everdeen is this young woman. If you've not read it by Thomas Hardy, she starts off the book. She's just living with an aunt, and in fact, she receives her first proposal from Gabriel Oak, who is also a sheep farmer, and he's, you know, he believes he's on his way up, and he can offer her a good future, and has admired her from afar, and but she turns him down, and then she his fortunes change, their paths meet again, but her fortunes change hugely because she inherits quite a successful farm. So she goes off to become kind of the lady of the manor. Mm. And this is it. Gabriel Oak ends up working for her because of a disaster that happens to him. But the neighbouring farmer is Mr. Baldwood, who develops quite a passion and quite an obsession for her. But she, in turn, develops this passion for a character called Sergeant Troy, who is very dashing. And in the original film with Julie Christie as Bathsheba Everdeen, is played by Terence Stamp.
Ooh.
Yes.
Right.
And Gabriel Oak is played by Alan Bates. But it's quite interesting. I just jotted this down. This is not necessarily about love, but I thought this was quite perceptive of Thomas Hardy. He said, "It is difficult for a woman to define her feelings in language which has chiefly been made by men to express theirs."
Wow.
Yeah. So this is with regards to Bathsheba in terms of Troy, Sergeant Troy. So Bathsheba loved Troy in a way that only self-reliant women love when they abandon their self-reliance. When a strong woman recklessly throws away her strength, she is worse than a weak woman who has never any strength to throw away. One source of her inadequacy is the novelty of the occasion. She has never had practice in making the best of such a condition. Weakness is doubly weak by being new.
Right.
So that's quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, because Bathsheba is a very strong woman, and then she just absolutely loses it. Yes.
Right.
Yes. And in the background, Gabriel Oak has just been kind of waiting, basically, has continued. Because, in fact, right at the beginning, he says, "I shall do one thing in this life, one thing certain, that is love you and long for you and keep wanting you till I die." And then he does get his opportunity. And she says, "What a way Oak had," she thought, "of enduring things." Baldwood, who seemed so much deeper and higher and stronger in feeling than Gabriel, had not yet learnt any more than she herself, the simple lesson which Oak showed a mastery of by every turn and look he gave, that among the multitude of interests by which he was surrounded, those which affected his personal well-being were not the most absorbing and important in his eyes. Oak meditatively looked upon the horizon of circumstances without any special regard to his own standpoint in the midst. That was how she would wish to be.
Mm.
And then, yeah, spoiler alert, they do end up together.
Oh.
And this is the quote that I think is repeated a few times in the film. Gabriel says, "And at home by the fire, whenever you look up, there I shall be. And whenever I look up, there you will be." And I can remember when I read this the first time, which would have been in my teens,
yeah,
I just thought that was just so wonderful and romantic.
Yeah.
I now actually think it's really dull. I think I aspired towards that. It's really, it's...
Oh, okay.
And it isn't supposed to be really nice, but now I think, you know, and it's funny because I've completely changed my views of the men in, as I've, you know,
yeah,
you know, since my teens, and here I am in my early sex days.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, which is why I find it so fascinating, a book, because I've kind of changed my view of which of those I would choose.
That's right. You followed it all the way through.
I certainly wouldn't have gone with Baldwin, though. No, he was always dull.
Oh, dear.
But you've got that. Yes, it's quite more than a triangle, actually, because there's three men and Bathsheba. But yes, I thought, you know, there's just we could have spent a long, long time talking about the different books that are about love. It was quite interesting because I thought the obvious person to go to would be Jane Austen, but actually I found very few. Maybe it was the niceties of the period that she was living in, that, you know, because obviously most of her books are romances in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't kind of find any particular quote that kind of encapsulated it.
Yeah.
Of the Jane Austen books, Persuasion is my favourite.
Mm-hmm.
And there was quite a nice one with that. But I do find that one probably the most romantic of all her books.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, I thought of the Brontes, which, of course, then takes you to a book that is it about love or, you know, Wuthering Heights.
Control.
Yes, yeah. I mean, a lot of people see that as an incredibly romantic book, but I don't know
I think
it's
quite
find
threatening.
It
yeah.
quite a sinister book, mm-hmm. and ruin a, you know, is it a grand passion? Is it an obsession? It's unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't do either of them any good, and then they wreck other people's lives as well.
Yeah.
So, again, if you're listening to this and you're a massive fan of Wuthering Heights and you want to tell us...
As a love story.
Yes, do chip in on the Facebook page. Or if you're local, please, you know, come in and we'll have a whole podcast about why Wuthering Heights really is a love story. Whereas, no, I've always found it, yeah.
And, you know, wider than that, how... people take different things from the same book.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I suppose that's just because of their own experience, their own upbringing. Everything falls into, you read a book and you can get totally different things from
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah.
But the writer as well, the observations that the writer has to go through to come, you know, to write books like that and to get to people's heart like they do.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yes.
Really, yeah.
Yes.
Talking about observations, I suppose I came to poetry quite late on, and I think I like poetry now because I read it out loud. Yeah. It makes an awful lot more sense to me when I read it out loud, which is a bit weird. But, you know, it's it's the way of it. And a lot of songs I regard as poems, you know, really. I mean, some of them you can't read out loud because they don't scan very well. But I've found a couple that... Sorry about the sound of the cards. That I'm going to read out just a section of a couple of songs.
Yeah.
And you see if you can recognise them.
Okay. Answers on a postcard, please.
Oh, no. The first one. Are you ready?
Yeah.
How many times do I have to tell you, even when you're crying, you're beautiful too? The world is beating down. I'm around through every mood. You're my downfall. You're my muse. My worst distraction. My rhythm and blues. I can't stop singing. It's ringing in my head for you.
What no. You that's no idea.
All of Me by John... Well, sung by John Legend. Do you know the song?
No, I don't.
Listen to the song. It's a lovely song.
Right.
It's written, I must do this. It's written by John Stevens and Tobias Gadd.
Uh-huh.
But you're my downfall. You're my muse.
Uh-huh.
Oh, goodness me. He's in love. The next one. This. I went to the doctor and guess what he told me? Guess what he told me? He said, girl, you better have fun no matter what you do, but he's a fool.
Ooh.
Because nothing compares to you.
Ah.
Sinead. Uh-huh. Written by Prince, obviously.
Yes.
But the famous.
Yes.
When she released it in that video.
I know.
I mean, not a... Exactly a love song, because she's talking about, you know, you've gone. But every time I hear that song, it's just, a tear comes to your eye, doesn't it?
Yes.
Even more poignant now, I suppose, because she's left us. But, yeah. So those are the two that I sort of picked out. There was quite a few that I went through. But, of course, you've got all the... Like the doo-wops and the oohs and the But yes, I think songs, love songs especially, are lovely.
Yes.
Out loud as a poem.
Yes. Well, of course, should we mention Robert Burns?
I think we should.
Because, of course, I'm not going to read Love is Like a Red, Red Rose.
So controversial.
It's overdone. No, it's a lovely poem, but actually the one that always gets me, but I think it's because I just love the Eddie Reader version of it.
That's
and I'm
true.
Delighted to say that Lou and myself and Maggie, who works in Foggy Toddle, are going to see Eddie
We're
Reader
see
when she comes to Dumfries.
When is it? April.
I think so, yes. So I can't sing it. So, but I'll be probably singing it in my head, and the song. And of course, Burns was a very romantic man. Too romantic.
A little too romantic.
One might say. But he did. You know, to be honest, I don't know a massive amount about Burns, and you know, and I think there are probably aspects of him as well that are, you know.
Romanticized.
Yes, romanticized. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But he clearly loved a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Let's put it that way. But the one I like the best is A Fond Kiss, which was a he was in love with a woman who then I think married somebody else and went off to the West Indies, and this was the poem that he wrote for her. It's a fond kiss and then we sever, a farewell and then forever. Deep in heart-wrung tears I'll pledge thee, warring signs and groans I'll wage thee. Who shall say that fortune grieves him, while the star of hope she leaves him? Me ne cheer for twinkle lights me. Dark despair around benights me. I'll ne'er blame my partial fancy. Nothing could resist my Nancy. But to see her was to love her. Love but her and love forever. Had we ne'er loved so kindly, had we ne'er loved so blindly, never met or never parted, we had ne'er been broken hearted. Fare thee well, thou first and fairest, fare thee well, thou best and dearest. Thine be ilka joy and treasure, peace, enjoyment, love and pleasure. A fond kissing then we sever, a farewell, alas, forever. Deep in heart-wrung tears I'll pledge thee, warring sighs and groans I'll wage thee. And when Eddie Reader sings it,
yeah,
I blob like a baby.
Yeah. Oh, we better so, be prepared yeah, for that.
Bring the hankies. Yeah,
bring the tissues, Maggie. Yes.
She just sings it so beautifully.
But just lovely words put together so well.
Yes.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Now, have you anything else you'd like to share, Lou?
I'm going to say another song.
Yes.
I think we've probably gone to the... Have we got to the end?
Well, I do want to share Rabbit's Wedding.
Rabbit's Wedding. You do Rabbit's Wedding.
Well, no, do you want to do a song and then we can finish with Rabbit's Wedding?
This is At Last, Etta James.
Oh, aha.
Yeah. And I thought, yeah, right, okay. At last, my love has come along. My lonely days are over and life is like a song. The skies above are blue. My heart was wrapped up in clover. The night I looked at you. I found a dream that I could speak to, a dream that I can call my own. I found a thrill to press my cheek to, a thrill that I've never known. You smiled, oh, and then the spell was cast, and here we are in heaven, for you are mine at last.
Oh, that's lovely.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Glorious. Well, just to finish, there's a little book that I came across in the bookshop, in Foggy Toddle Books, and it's a picture lion, and it's the story and pictures are by Garth Williams, and it's called The Rabbit's Wedding, and it's just beautifully illustrated, so I will need to put some pictures up. So there were two little rabbits, a white rabbit and a black rabbit. They lived in a large forest, and every morning they hopped out of bed and out into the early morning sunshine. They loved to spend all day playing together. "Let's play hop, skip and jump me," said the little white rabbit. "Oh, let's," said the little black rabbit, and with a hop, skip and a jump, he sailed right over the little rabbit's back. Then hop, skip and a jump, and the little white rabbit jumped over the little black rabbit's back. But after a while, the little black rabbit sat down and looked very sad. "What's the matter?" asked the little white rabbit. "Oh, I'm just thinking," replied the little black rabbit. Anyway, they go to play hide and seek, and they have with the buttercups and daisies, until the little white rabbit wants to play find the acorn. But after a while, the little black rabbit's looking sad again. And the little white rabbit says, "What's the matter?" And the little black rabbit says, "Oh, I'm just thinking." And then they play race around the blackberry bush until they're tired and thirsty. But again, the little black rabbit is looking sad and he says, "He's just thinking." And then they play jump the daisies and run through the clover. And little white rabbit's getting hungry, so they eat a patch of dandelions. But yeah, you can tell what's going to happen. The little black rabbit is looking sad again, and he's just thinking. But then little white rabbit says, "But what are you thinking about?"
Finally.
Yes. "I'm just thinking about my wish," replied Little Black Rabbit. "What is your wish?" asked the Little White Rabbit. "I just wish that I could be with you forever and always," replied the Little Black Rabbit. The Little White Rabbit opened her eyes very wide and thought very hard. "Why don't you wish a little harder?" asked the Little White Rabbit. The Little Black Rabbit, look at that illustration.
I've
got to put that up on the, so there's a fabulous illustration of the Little Black Rabbit. Opened his eyes very wide and thought very hard. "I wish you were all mine," said the Little Black Rabbit. And then they picked dandelions and put them in their ears. Oh, sorry, I've missed a bit. they do come to that.
Yeah.
"Do you really wish that?" asked the Little White Rabbit. "I really do," replied the Little Black Rabbit. "Then I will be all yours forever and always, forever and always." And the Little White Rabbit gave the Little Black Rabbit her soft white paw.
Oh.
And then they picked dandelions and put them in their ears. And all the other little rabbits came to see how happy they both were. And they danced in a wedding circle around them. And the other animals of the forest came to watch the wedding dance. And they too danced all night in the moonlight. And so the little rabbits were wed and lived together happily in the big forest, eating dandelions, playing jump the daisies, run through the clover and find the acorn all day long.
That's just perfect.
And the little black rabbit never looked sad again.
No. Well, no.
No.
The perfect romance.
Yes. So I think everybody who's listening needs to get their snails out. Perhaps.
And their willow wands. Yes, but don't get caught running around your house.
No. And then you can later on, when you have found the person of your dreams, you can jump the daisies and find the acorn.
Right.
And never be sad again.
Perfect place to finish.
Yes. I think so. So happy Valentine's Day. Yes.
Have a lovely day, everybody.
If and kiss and then we sever. If farewell lasts forever. Deep in heart round tears. Thee. War inside.